Thank you, Vicious. Marina, Rav Shlita. As is always, whatever I say regarding halacha is the halacha v'lo ma'aseh, because any personal queries should be forwarded to one's Rav. But we have here a fascinating subject today, even though it might be a little bit morbid in that it reminds us of the end. But nevertheless, what is a big dilemma, especially for solicitors and accountants, is when they are asked to do something which does not appear to be according to the halacha. The question today is...
Do RFAs fall under the same heading as well?
Pardon?
Do RFAs?
Definitely, definitely.
Or can they blame it on the solicitor?
So, of course, as we all know, where there's a will, there is a relative. And when it comes to the crunch, it'll all be in the wife's name anyway. It happened once at Bushy Cemetery, where Moshe heard a loud crying of a woman to investigate. The woman and was crying. Oh, Joseph, it's been 4 years since you left me. I miss you so much. He says, so what's the matter with you? She says, my husband. I miss him dearly. But he says, what do you mean your husband? It says on this tombstone, in memory of Frieda Goldberg. She says, oh, yes, he put everything in my name. Once this man walked into a bar and he saw this old friend of his drinking and he said, you look awful, what's the matter? He says, oh, my mother died in May, she left me $15,000. Oh yeah, that's tough, yeah. He said, then in June mother died, you left me $60,000. Really? Both parents gone in such a short period of time? No wonder you're depressed, he said. Well, and then last month my aunt died and she left me $100,000. Yeah, that's a lot to deal with. Losing three family members in 3 months, that must be terrible for you. He says, yeah, and then this month, nothing, nothing, not even a single dime. The rules of inheritance are laid out in the Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk 8 till 11. Where the Benos Tzolochot ask about their possibility of having a share in Yerushas Eretz Yisrael, they had no brothers, and it was ruled that they had a share. And the rules of order of inheritance is there set out, and you have this on the first page of your handout, and the idea of giving you lots of handouts today is so that I don't have to talk so much, or because we've got very little time to discuss what is a very big subject. So anyone who wants to get involved in the subject is highly recommended to spend their time on this new sefer called Mishpat HaTzavah, not recommended for bedtime reading, which gives all the different rules and regulations. But in brief, the Torah is saying that in the laws of Yerusha are such that what one leaves goes to sons, not to the daughters, and not to the wife, and that the Bechor, the firstborn, gets a double portion. And the question is asked, how can the Torah ignore, shall we say, what appears to be a very humane and equalizing attitude towards all sexes? There's so much given about treatments, good treatment of the woman, making sure that she's protected by a ksuva and all these kinds of things. Why is it that the Torah tends to disregard the interests of the females in favor of the males? What we have to look at is the wording of the pasuk there, which describes the rules of inheritance as chukas mishpot, not just as mishpot, but also as chukas mishpot, chok meaning one of the rules of the Torah where the reasons are not given. There are some things in the Torah which we do not have human understanding for, such as the parah adumah, the re'ah, and laws of inheritance are also called chok, that we do not always understand what Hashem's reasons are. Nevertheless, there are commentaries, including Dan Grunwald, who wrote an excellent book on the Jewish law of inheritance in English, where it is suggested that a possible reason is that the responsibilities of the man are greater in that he's got to provide the ksuva for his wife. He has to provide, or he does provide, a nadunya, a dowry for his daughter. So whereas the females are generally looked after in the normal manner of behavior, so more benefit is diverted towards the man when it comes to Yerusha. Okay, you might still have questions about this, but this might go some way to understanding in which direction the Torah is going. There is also, of course, a question. If a firstborn son is a wicked son, who might be a multimillionaire, and the second son, who will not get the same as the double portion of the fachar, might be in full-time learning in yeshiva, and therefore needs to supplement his income, or doesn't have any income, you might ask, is it right that this second son gets less than the first son? The rules of the Torah are sacrosanct. It is not for us to change them. Nevertheless, there are ways, legal ways, of sharing out according to one's wishes. Because it's like this. If a person dies, then from that moment, that money no longer belongs to him. It's not his anymore. The split second that a person dies, the Torah is saying it belongs to, automatically to the Yorshim, as described in this list. And so if we turn to the next page of the handout, we come to the Shulchan Aruch Choshev Mishpat. Siman Resh Pei Aleph, Hamar Ben Achosov, and we'll read some of the Shulchan Aruch there. Ein Adam Yachol Laharish Misha'ena Roy LeYoresh. If a person says, I want to bequeath to somebody who is not in the list of order of inheritance, who is not qualified to inherit, Velo Laka Yerusha LeYoresh, he cannot uproot inheritance from a rightful person who inherits. Bein Shet Siva Vubari, Bein Shet Shechid Meira. Well, Shechid Meira, there's certain exceptions, but if he's healthy, if he's not healthy, Bein Alper, Bein Bechsav, whether orally or in writing, L'fichach, therefore, Ha'omer Ish Panomi Bechori, my firstborn son, Lo Yitzel Pishnai, he may not take a double portion. Ish Panomi Bani, Lo Yerashim Echov, or one son won't inherit with his brothers. Lo Makalom, it is as if he has not said anything. Ish Poloni Rashem V'mokam Sheish Lo Bas, or so and so will inherit in place of a daughter, or Biti Tirashen, or my daughter will inherit V'mokam Sheish Lo Ben in place of a son, Lo Amach Lo. It's as if he has not said anything. V'chein Kol Tzion, Kiyotze B'zeh, similarly in all such circumstances. Avol Bat, Im Hoyu Lo Yerushim Rabim, if he has many inheritees, Gagon Bonim Rabim, Achim Obonos, he has sons, brothers, daughters, Omach Shushchit Meira, but if he says, when he is on his deathbed, or when he is in his last stages of a serious illness, Peloni Achi Yerusheni, my brother will inherit me, Michlal Achai Obiti, Pelonis Yerusheni, Michlal Benosai, maybe daughters, and so on. Zvorov Keira, we do follow anything that a Shechid Meira says, a person who is on his deathbed, because he will be worried if his wishes are not adhered to, and if he knows his wishes are not adhered to, it might hasten his death. Therefore, is a rule that the Shechid Meira, we do follow his instructions. Bein Shom Al Peh, Bein Shom Al Peksav, whether orally or writing, Av Nimon Peloni Bani Yoshi Levado, but if he says, my son will inherit alone, Imam Adavarav Kayomim, it will stand, Av Nim Kosov Al Kosov Livno, then he needs an apotropos, he needs a third party. We'll come to that in a moment. If we look in the left-hand column, Irasei Naim, we can see a bit of commentary there. Sereish Pei Aleph, Laharish Mishena Royal Yosha Vilago, Hainuk is a Mefarish, Va'ozil Ish Palomi, Bini Lo Yerash. If a person says, so and so my son will not inherit, Hainu Lako Ish Palomi, Yosheni, Vamokam Sheish Bas, where there's a daughter, Hainu Marish Mishena Royal, he's trying to make inherit someone who's not fit. Tamech Mishneim, Shumatona on Moshikos Patar. Masneim, sorry. He is Masneh, he's making condition against something in the Torah. You can't make a financial condition against something which the Torah specifies. The Torah says that the sons inherit Beshova equally with the Bechel Bibshnaim, and the firstborn son gets double. Vayim Dafka Beloshin BeYerusha, as we now enter the wide lines, this is all Beloshin Yerusha. When a person says, I make inherit, or I bequeath, of a Beloshin Matonov, and if a person says it, I give it now as a present, a person can give any present in his lifetime. She'omar kol asher ochelet mimeni yinosin l'panoim v'mokim she'esh avonim d'rav kayomim. A person's words will stand if a person says, I give it as a present. So, anyone will advise you, in terms of inheritance tax, to give your assets away now, more than 7 years before your departure. And so if one does do such a thing, and it's done in the form of a legally binding maton or present, then that's fine. That's okay. and a person is fully entitled to do this. Alright, there is something written that if a person tries to depart from what the Torah specifies, Ein Ruach HaChomet Mose Emenu, the spirit of our rabbis do not rest upon him, but if a person does delve into this method of Maton or whatever, then he might still nevertheless give something significantly more to the Bechor. So that is to say, if he gives away Matonos, he might nevertheless still, when he's at the end giving 10,000 to each son, he'll give 20,000 to the Bechor, still to pay respect to a provision which is put in the Torah. That in essence is the halacha. But we have quite a debate. There is a debate which has reached this country. It reached in the form of a debate between Dayan Padva, the father of the existing Rosh Beis Din of the Adas. Dayan Padva is a friend of Rosh, who wrote the Cheshev HaEfod, and Rabbi Yochim Schlesinger, who is the Rosh Yeshiva HaRoma, who felt very troubled by the comments of Dayan Padva and wrote his own contrast called Savar B'Matlas Bori. The contrast of Rabbi Schlesinger is embodied in this booklet, which is really a number of letters which he wrote to Dayan Grunfeld, the grandfather of the Rav of our shul here. And Dayan Grunfeld, as I said, wrote the Sefer on Jewish laws of inheritance. And he set out in great detail what the various arguments are. In brief, those who argue, well, what about Dina D'Malchus Adina? There is such a thing, Dina D'Malchus Adina, which means that one follows the rule of the country in which one lives. If one follows the rule of the country in which one lives, and a proper will is set up and drawn according to the statutes of the land, then somebody might argue, well, if it's a valid will, Dina D'Malchus Adina, the halacha is you go according to the law of the land, then therefore you have to follow what the will says. However, it's not as easy as that, because if the will is going against what is stipulated in the Torah, then it can't be a valid will. Dina D'Malchus Adina is written about to a great extent by many poskim, especially Shach and Marashtam, the Rashba. It's ineffective if it deviates from the orders of inheritance. What Rav Schlesinger, interestting, writes in his Kuntras is that the one thing which Dina D'Malchus Adina really applies to is the one thing which people often try to avoid, and that's taxation. Yeah, there is no doubt whatsoever that Dina D'Malchus Adina applies. But in other things, there are big question marks. There is also another question, and that is, there is a rule in the Gemara, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. It is a mitzvah to fulfill the words of the departed. So if a person leaves specific wishes, then one should follow them. It's a mitzvah. The question is, though, can mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames override the rules of Yerusha as set out in the Torah? And that is the essence of the machlokas. Of course, it's a machlokas to Shem Shemayim, and we can respect both opinions. The machlokas between Dayan Padva and Rav Schlesinger. If we turn over the page in the handout, I will show you a piece of what Dayan Padva wrote in the Cheshev HaEfod, where he actually quotes Rav Schlesinger, and he summarizes Rav Schlesinger's case. If we look at the first complete paragraph, on the right hand side, which starts with Vikibalti, and we got that. Simon Kufvov, Cheshev HaEfod, Vikibalti was a mitzvah of Meis Harav Agon, Marina Rav Elyokim Schlesinger Shlita. I received a letter from Rav Schlesinger, Vitarev Tvorov, so he now summarizes what he writes in the Kuntras. Gichol Eile HaTzavos HaNasos Lefichu Kayen. All these wills, according to the law of the land, Ein Bem Shum Tokef. They don't have any value or validity because they are against the halacha. Kihain matnos bori, they are trying to give a matona with a healthy person. That is to say, we're not talking about somebody on the deathbed. So it's a matnas bori, utsrichos kinyan, and there has to be a kinyan. If you give a present, then there has to be a kinyan. There has to be a form of acquisition. Kinyan habor, kinyan shtar, kinyan kesef, whatever it is, there has to be a manner of acquisition. And in order to do that, it's not enough to write out a will. Because when one writes out a will and one leaves it locked up in the solicitor's office till after 120 years, there is no kinyan made for the beneficiaries. In order that those beneficiaries should own it properly in the form of matana, then they have to make a kinyan when one is still alive. Well, the Shulchan Aruch does talk about a shlish. That in certain circumstances, when it's put in the hands of an apotropos, a third party who holds it, and there is an instruction made, there may be certain circumstances when it can be called as though it was a matona. But I'm not sure if we'll have enough time to deal with that, but there is something like this. There is something the Ramah talks about in giving a dowry in a will, and I'll try and come to that after this. So, Vamakablim Yerusha are Pitzavo Kazos. People who accept an inheritance according to this will, the Elam Yoshim and Torah, but they are not Yoshim according to the rule of the Torah, Nicholim the Isur Gezel. They are being trapped in what is a prohibition of theft, because they are holding on to money which is rightfully theirs. Alright, what if the beneficiaries Daraisa, namely the sons, are quiet? Umaskimim. And they agree. They agree that the sisters can hold on to the money that they get. Eino matdinei sisa, that does not minimize the prohibition. Kihem shoskim, the reason why they're quiet is the fisha'inum yodim shebiodom mimchos. They don't even know that they can claim more money. They think that the will which is left is valid, and therefore they keep quiet. Vavya mechila batos, and therefore when they're having a mechila, they're letting off their sisters, it is done by mistake. And therefore, mechila b'tois is not called a mechila. Therefore, although the money is held in the girl's hands, it is theft, and they are entitled to it. Adkan tovara v'kitzel. That is a summary of Rav Schlesinger's words. Uladati, according to me, says Rav Padva lo chenru. It's not so. Ki ein abonim shoskim nefisha ein yodim shibyodim nimchams. The reason why the sons are quiet is not because they don't know the din. Of course they know the din. All they want to do is to honor their father. And their father left the express wish that a portion goes to the daughters, and they want to respect that. Or at least, it would not be befitting for their cover to go against the wish of their father, even if they're not expressly pursuing the wish of their father. And then he quotes one or two sources. Even where the Torah is not strictly according to the Torah, if one does keep to it, mitzvah ka'avdi mishum kibudav, it's a mitzvah of honoring one's father. He quotes Rabbi Akiva Reagan in support of this, etc. So we won't go further into what Darren Padda says. But there is clearly a difference of opinion, and it was known that the Adas Beis Din had frequently been going in favour of a will which had been left according to the law of the land, even though it was going against the laws of the ocean. Frankly, I find it difficult to understand, because the arguments which are put forward by Schlesinger feel more compelling when he goes through, you know, the rules of Mitzvah Lachaim Divrei Meis and Dinah D'Malchus Sedina and Kibudav and so on and so forth. The fact is that ownership transpires to the children the moment the death takes place. The remark does write, at the end of this siman which we quoted from the Shulchan Aruch, that a person can stipulate that it's called a shtar chetzi zochor, that a portion which is leaving goes as a dowry to his daughter, to his unmarried daughter, that she should have something for when she gets married. And if he says this to an apotropos, to a third party, then it's already as if there is a kind of kinyan, like a matnas bori, and that is okay, and that can be done, but it should be done in the form of a document called a shtar chetzi zochor. This idea of shtar chetzi zochor is brought forward by a number of poskim to say that we could extend this idea for any will in order to make sure that the will complies with halacha. That is to say, notwithstanding what the Torah says, and the Torah does say, well, it's chukas mishpot, if a person has his or her reasons for wishing to give money to children in a particular way, then it can be done. And there are mainly two different ways. The first method is Dine Grunfeld's way, which he has sources for. And Dine Grunfeld sets out the actual text of a shtar following his consultation with Rav Schlesinger. And he basically is saying that a shtar of the will is saying, I give what I'm giving now as a present. and some sort of chalipin is made, like lifting up a handkerchief, I'm giving what I'm giving as a present, which will be fully effective and cannot be revoked 1 hour before my death. That is to say, I'm giving the present now. I can change my mind in some of the terms, depending on changed circumstances as the years go by, but I cannot revoke it 1 hour before my death, so that that time it is definitely effective, and then it is a matona before one's death, and then it is valid. The problem that I have with that is that, having discussed it with a very expert lawyer, is that that might not be held up in English law, because there is a period of uncertainty. When you do a conveyance, it has to be complete unconditionally, unless there are covenants and so on, at the time that it's given. But if one is saying that I can revoke it at some future time until an hour before my death, and of course that time can't be specified because one doesn't know when it is, it's possible that that might be challenged in English law. So I do have a little problem with that. I'm sure that Diane Grunfeld at the time had legal advisors. He was a lawyer himself. But I haven't yet found the answer to that. There is, in your handout, two different kinds of notes of indebtedness. And this is based on the principle of the remark of the Shtar Shchivmeir, of the Shtar Chetzi Zochah. What is this? This is something which one appends to the will. There's an ordinary will. I bequeath whatever, in all the lushan of the state. I give to my firstborn, and I give to my daughters, and I give to my aunt, and I give to my uncle, and I give to tzedakah, and this yeshiva, and that yeshiva. And it's all with the word bequeath, which according to the Torah is meaningless. But, in addition to that, one says to one's executor, who passed enormously, look, I'm going to create a debt to you, which is to the value greater than that of my estate. So let's say my estate is worth £2 million. I say to my executor, I owe you £3 million. And, well, you've got here in this document £5 million. This is issued back from the Manchester Bays Din. Actually, the lotion used here is I owe to my wife and daughter. If you look at the second line, the wife and the daughter, or the wife, is entitled, as her ksuba writes, she's entitled for the rest of her life to live off the husband's estate, with all her needs of food, clothes, shelter, council tax, anything, any expense whatsoever, a woman can claim from her husband's estate. So to say she gets nothing from her husband is incorrect. The Yerushim have a duty to make sure that she can draw off the estate any of her needs till she dies. And the sum of auxiliaries can be enormous over the period of her lifetime. But, having said that, this says, I owe to my wife and daughter the sum of £5 million. The next document you have in your handout is creating a debt to the executor, or to more than one executor. So it is quite similar, but there isn't enough time for us to go through all the wording. But I'll make a point briefly as to what it's saying. Let's say I'm the executor of an estate, so I am being owed £3 million. This is great. But being honest as I am and wishing to respect the wishes of my close friend or whatever, or relation, but it's preferably not a relation, the poskim. I sit down with the Yerushim in the will, and I say to them, look, it was the wish of your father that you all get an equal amount. Males, females, and so on. According to the Torah, that is not the way it would have been divided out. And therefore, the sons amongst you could insist that I share it out according to the Torah. So the sons amongst you could insist that I ignore you females. And the firstborn son is entitled to a double share. However, £3 million are owed to me. And I'm quite happy to take that for myself, and there'll be nothing left for any of you. But if the sons can agree that it is shared out according to your father's wishes, then I'm prepared to renege on the debt owed to me, and I will share it out accordingly that way. So that way, it is in the choice of the Torah Yerushim to forego what they're rightly entitled to, and say, okay, we agree. Well, they haven't got much choice, have they? Because otherwise they don't get anything and it all comes to me and I'll take my 3 million or the best part of it. There are a number of problems.
The first problem is what happened to the original money. Richard's father would have actually received the money in the first place, in which case his estate is that much larger.
Well, wait, no, sorry. The estate is valued at £2 or £2.5 million.
Yeah, but there had to be created debt. Yeah.
Right. Now, in English law, how do you can create the debt by a deed? In halacha, you don't even use a deed. As if you read the wording of the second note of indebtedness, in English law, all right, there might be certain legal problems. I checked with a lawyer, and the lawyer said that you can create a deed of debt, that £3 million is owed to such and such person.
But surely that's getting around that halacha from the Torah. The Torah was obviously intentional in describing it in that way.
It is desirable to go according to the rules of the Torah. However, this is something which affects people so personally, and there are so many mishalim involved, that there is a very real risk that many people will ignore the rules of the Torah and will just say, I'm going to go ahead regardless. And in the light of that, the poskim have put their mind to doing this in a halachic way. But it is correct to do it according to the Torah way, definitely. And there's also the question of tzedakah and so on. Now, as I said earlier, this is a chok. A chok we're not given the reason for. And the Chazon Ish is quoted, in fact, in detail by Rav Grunfeld as to what one's attitude should be when it comes to an issue such as this. That this is a chok, and one has to have respect for what the Torah is saying. I'll read to you a bit of the Chazon Ish.
The one who inherited twice and distributed that excess to the others. The problem from a tax point of view in the UK is that that would be taxed twice. It could be taxed twice.
If he hasn't actually received it, you mean because he's the simplest then would be, if there are such problems, is just to hand it over in one's time. There might be a capital gains tax problem, is that what you're saying?
No, it wasn't.
It is difficult.
A situation whereby you gave over in accordance to the Torah.
Yes.
But the father left wishes to his surviving children that they should give a gift immediately after the children received according to the Torah. But they only gave
half
of their
kids.
You're relying on the goodwill of the children. Unfortunately, you are relying on goodwill, and the person then who is making such a will has to know who he's dealing with, and there can be problems. And the simplest might be just to give in one's lifetime without these devices.
You can only give away a certain amount, you're bound to be left
without.
You can't give away your home, you're living in it. So
that's
a
mortgage.
Why not?
Why not? Because if you give them a tax for the time, when creating a joint line second debt policy, where you're writing the policy to pay off this debt duty, you show the beneficiaries. And normally speaking, when one shows the beneficiaries under the trust document, you normally leave them in equal proportion if they're children or wives. Now, what are the ramifications of that? I mean, in the trust document, therefore, would one have to have double, when you're actually doing the chatzilah, would you have to show it if the children are going to be three children, for example, or two children, would you have to leave double portion for the...
We're talking now about if someone leaves a will and he has, say, a son and two daughters, and he says, I leave a third to each of them. So that's in the statutory will, right? And that is the way it will come about under this executor device. So I don't see what the problem is with taxation.
My problem is that is it's a benefit in some way. He should be some sort of formula within that split. To take it, it shouldn't be as a if you've got three children, It shouldn't be split three ways, as it were. It should be split according to half of the initial trust document.
Right. What Poskim say is that even when this device is used, one should still give recognition to a Bechara and give him something extra, as we were saying earlier. There is something on this. But if there are problems of taxation, I don't see how it can arise if the actual will, which is recognised by the law of the land, is what is put into effect by the executor. It's simply that the executor is saying to the Yerushim, if you insist that this is done the Torah way, then I will claim a debt for myself, and then none of you will get anything.
Yeah, what I'm saying, if there's a policy put in place that's got £1 million benefit to pay off any taxation, technically speaking, the first should be entitled to £500,000 of that policy.
Right. If there's £1 million in the estate, and there is two sons, let's say there's two sons and a daughter, right?
Yeah.
Then, according to the Torah, the daughter gets nothing, and the Bechara gets 66.
Two-thirds,
66,666, and the other son gets 33,333, right? Now, if the person who's leaving the state wants an equal share to all of them, then he'll leave 33 to each of the children. So then the daughter gets, and the Bechara doesn't get the double. Now, if the will is written that way, it's not according to the Torah, but it can be put into effect by the executor saying, I am owed £2 million. I am going to prepare to forego what is owed to me if the sons agree that I share it out in accordance with the deceased wishes. You have to trust the executor. Yeah. If you can't, then give away the money now. Well, I do know from the Federation based this that most of the cases which come before them are on Yerushas. And it is a minefield. I once had a case where, as one of nine nephews and nieces, I had a tzavar from an aunt who was childless, and there was somebody else very distantly related who was wishing to make a claim on something that she had left, and there was a tzavar, and we went to a rav, and the rav says, well, tzavar is not halachically valid, but you have to make some peshara. We made an agreement, and everything was fine until this other party, the distant relation, went back to the rav and tried to get everything changed, and the rav somehow agreed he had claimed the interest over a period of years, and there wasn't enough money to give him through the whole lot. And so it went to, and there were three hearings, and it took 8 months, and I said to this distant relation, look, you know, if you go to the Beis Din, I will make a halakhic argument that you're not entitled to a penny, which I did, because of the dinim of Ksuvah and so on. And at the end of the result, we won our case, but we still gave him something. We just wanted to know what the halakha was. But the amount of money involved wasn't even that great. She left £20,000, which was nine nephews and nieces, and there was somebody else, and there were 10 people. Yeah, it was nothing. And yet the halakhic issues were so complicated, it was fascinating for the longest. Pardon?
Who went and gets injuries?
Yes. You don't know how much the Beis Din charge for their costs. Anyway, just to give a few examples then. Mr. Levy is married with two sons and two daughters. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say that name. I've just got it written down this way here. The eldest child is a boy who's a multimillionaire. The eldest daughter is married to a Kohel Jungerman, living in Israel with Kanaan Ara, a large family. The youngest son is a chartered accountant. The youngest child is a 19-year-old girl looking for Mr. Wright. Well, I think we've answered that question. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Cohen are Bali Tshuva. They have two young children, aged 7 and 6. The grandparents are not yet religious. Mr. and Mrs. Cohen are concerned about their children's education if they die whilst the children are still underage. So the good thing about a will is not just who gets what. It's leaving a wish as to what is going to happen with custody of the children. Rahmanal Islam, we shouldn't have to know of it. In those circumstances, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis definitely applies. And if one leaves a valid will according to the law of the land to say who should be in custody of the children. Now, Simon has recently attended a seminar and has become very enthralled with giving tzedakah. So he wants to buy for himself a big share in the Olam Haba, and he wants to give half of his estate to the North Hendon Hadassah Israel Synagogue. Is he entitled to do that? Is it a valid wish? If the money is left and it's for the Yerushim, then the Yerushim might say, we don't agree. It's our money. It doesn't go to the North Hendonadas synagogue. On the other hand, does it go to the North Hendonadas synagogue? Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. There is a principle in Shas, Amira l'gavoa. If a person says, I dedicate to the Mikdosh, to the Beis HaMikdosh, such and such, it's as if he's giving the Beis HaMikdosh a matono. It's as if it's giving a kinyan. Why? Because it's to Hekdosh. And there's that principle. If you just say, I'm giving something to Hekdosh, it's as a proper matono gemura. Therefore, if a person simply says in his will, I give 50% to the North End and Hadassah Yisrael synagogue, that is called Hekdosh, that is called tzedakah. Therefore, it is valid in halacha, and the Yerushim should acquiesce and give that money to North End and Hadassah. Nevertheless, the poskim say that where a person does bequeath in his will to various charities, it should not be more than 40 to 50%. That is to say, he should not deprive the Yerushim substantially from what the Torah really wishes for them. Then there's another case of Mr. and Mrs. Brown, only child has married out of the faith. They seek your advice regarding their wills. I think we've answered that question. Then there's a question of if they have no natural children, but they've adopted children. And they have brothers and sisters. I think we've answered that question as well. Various case studies, therefore, that one gets out of the problems if one does do a will according to the law of the land. And if one can find an executor whom one can trust, then you have the text before you in one or two different ways, without going through the exact wording, how this may be effected. Sorry? We have volunteers here for executors. I prefer to do without the headache, thank you very much. The Chazon makes it very clear that in this day and age, when people think that we are an enlightened nation, and that we believe in equality between the sexes, and there is such a thing as equality between the sexes, nobody has the right to criticize what the Torah is saying. When the Torah makes a chok, we have to respect it, just like we respect the Parah Adumo, we respect the Gabonis, and so on. If we don't understand it, we have to understand that we do accept Hashem's authority. If you look at the sefer which is in front of me, and I hang half of it on the shtender and half of it off the shtender, it doesn't fall down. Why? Because it's supported by the bit which is on the shtender. Namely, my emunah is based on the fact that there is reason to what I'm doing in my Yiddishkeit, because I have accepted the nisim which Hashem did for us when we came out of Mitzrayim. I accept that Torah is emes in every single way, but there are certain parts of the Torah which I don't understand, which is hard for me to explain. That doesn't have a visible support. But as one is in the Torah more and more, one can quite rightfully say the whole of that sefer is supported. That when I say Amen to a bracha, that is related to the word emunah, acceptance. And I am with my emunah accepting everything on Masha Kosova Torah, even if it is difficult for me to understand how my daughter might not readily be able to receive in a will what I might bequeath to her. The Torah has its reasons. If the firstborn son is wicked, he still gets according to the Torah. Hashem's got his cheshbon. He knows what he's doing. If he wants a wicked person to get more, that's Hashem's wish. It's not for us to decide. Nevertheless, as I've said, because people are so feeling this personalized in that being of what they want to do with their own money, yes, they can do what they want with their money, but it's only when it belongs to them. Once they die, it's no longer theirs. I hope that in this short space of time we managed to throw light on what is a very complicated subject, and I'll try my best afterwards if there are any questions. Thank you very much. Okay.